This is Abundance. I am your host, Dane Allred, and every week on Abundance, we celebrate the world full of wonderful blessings. I'm thankful for the bounty of this earth, and I hope to stir the desire in you to acknowledge the good in your life. Everyone has difficulties, problems, complaints, suffering, and you may even have a crisis in your life right now. I know the world is far from peaceful, warm, and a welcoming place, but one of the ways to change the way we are feeling right now, the way the world is today, is to focus on what is right with our world and what is right in your life today. One small step at a time, we can change from a world of pessimism, negativity, and hopelessness to a world where everyone can be optimistic, positive, and hopeful. You'll see how this attitude has changed my life today as we examine 1,001 things I'm thankful for. I call it my list of 1,001 thanks. Today we'll see how accident, number 7 from my list, can not only be endured in life, but may also enrich our other experiences. Our episodes today include burned rice twice, 3-car pileup, write your own recommendation, spare change, tracker toes, running for rolls, and I'll also read The Night Before Christmas by C. Clement Moore. I've learned my listeners love to hear about my problems and how I decide to deal with them. I have an abundance of funny and interesting things that have happened in my life, and I think my job may be to tell you about them so you feel better about your own life. If nothing else, you may be entertained, and that's a kind of abundance we can all use. Number 7, accident. Most people aren't thankful for accident. The non-fatal accidents we'll be discussing today have actually made me a better person, and at least they didn't happen to you. When something bad happens, the usual reaction is to curse the skies. Then, after a while, we may even make a funny story out of the terrible experience we had. In fact, most of the conversations I seem to have with others are about listening to the bad experience someone else has had while I'm waiting to tell the other person how much worse my experience was than theirs. Accident is something we can usually survive. I hope the accidents you survive in the future make for some great stories in your future. These installments are called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Dane Allred, and we'll call this first one Twice Burned Rice. A funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Burned rice twice. I may be the world's laziest cook. I do know how to cook an omelet. I even took a cooking class in high school called Bachelor Survival. The only thing I remember cooking was chocolate mousse. And since no one in my group liked how it tasted, I ate 5 or 6 servings. I broke out in hives, had to stay home for a couple of days. I'm also cheap. I don't like to spend a lot for breakfast or lunch. Since I eat lunch at school, I tried cooking a plain potato for a while. Just a potato cooked in a microwave, but after a while that got kind of boring. About this time, I realized I probably needed to start eating breakfast more regularly, so here's the routine I find myself in nearly every day. I like to cook some oatmeal before school since it's only that only takes a couple of minutes. I really don't like milk, so I only put some maple syrup on it. Oatmeal is supposed to be good for lowering cholesterol, and it also counts as roughage, so I've done 2 good things as the day begins, and I do that every day. Continuing in the single food category, I cook brown rice at school. Brown rice takes a while for some reason, so this may be the extent of my culinary skills. 5 minutes on high, 45 on medium. And then I have a very filling lunch, which can be topped with a little salt or a little sugar. That's right. Nothing else on the rice. No milk, no spices, no nothing. The rice is another serving or two of roughage, and the argument I offer for rice every day for lunch is 3 billion people who eat rice for every meal can't be too wrong. Here's a really strange part of the breakfast and lunch scenario. I've gotten used to eating this every day, as in I've been eating oatmeal and rice every day for 3, 4, or 5 years now. I don't know how long it's been. I had to do a commercial. Some people make fun of the fact that I eat the same thing every breakfast and every lunch, but the good news about rice for lunch is it seems to keep me more awake in the afternoon, where I used to fade before I started that routine. The only problem with being so regular is that the habit sometimes overtakes the logic of what goes into such a simple meal. The following problem happened not just once, but twice. I thought it happened again the other day, but someone else was responsible that time. Here's what happened. Rice is simple. Shake in the hundreds of grains, fill it up with water, maybe add some salt, and start cooking. But remember, brown rice cooks for 50 minutes, 45 at medium, after 5 minutes on high. Now, the only time I really have problems with this simple recipe is when I get distracted. Usually, I'm talking with somebody else, or I have something else on my mind, so I'm trying to do two things at once. And since I don't want to be rude, somewhere in the conversation, I forget one of the steps. There's really no excuse, but at least twice I've tried to cook rice without any water. If you've never been blessed to smell rice cooked without water for 50 minutes, I can give you a few details to help you understand the smell. Think about toast completely burned through with some hints of coffee. I don't think there was any smoke, but everyone on that side of the building was sure there was a fire somewhere, but they just couldn't figure out where. It's the worst inside the microwave. I'm just glad it didn't start on fire. I could see the fire department pulling my plastic bowl of smoking rice out of the microwave and trying to identify who was the idiot who decided to fry rice today. Needless to say, the first time I burned rice, there was a general uproar about the fire, which was burning somewhere in the building. Imagine my surprise when I opened the microwave and saw a pile of dark brown burned something. I really wasn't smart enough to keep quiet about it, so everybody made fun of the fact that I couldn't even cook plain rice. They really enjoyed teasing me the second time I burned the rice. Now I'm paranoid. Sometimes I go back and I double check to make sure the bowl has rice and water. A couple of weeks ago, I smelled what I thought was burning rice, and I rushed to the microwave. I had remembered to add water that day, so I breathed a sigh of relief. Somewhere, someone was burning toast. And that's okay, as long as I don't get blamed for it. Accidents do come in all shapes and sizes. Some are as small as burning rice. Others involve cars driving too fast. We'll talk about a three-car pileup in just a minute. You're listening to Abundance. You may have heard someone say we need an attitude of gratitude, but we aren't just thankful on Abundance. We don't just have an attitude. We practice gratitude by expressing thanks each week. And in a seat of attack and accusation, Abundance is an island of peace and calm where we take just a part of the 168 hours that are given each week, and we proclaim a thankful attitude. We celebrate the joy and excitement of living in a world where many of us live healthy, productive lives, and we've used our present prosperity to bless the lives of others. Abundance is your chance to be your best, where we accentuate the positive and try to eliminate the negative. Now, for those who've been listening for a while, you really wouldn't think I would be grateful for anything with all of the misfortune I've inflicted on myself, not to mention the contributions of others. But think about it this way. If all of the following things have happened to me and I can still have a good attitude about life, you might want to stop complaining. Why would you listen to a guy who has sanded off his own little finger and stabbed himself in the hand with a potato pitchfork and got stuck overnight on the lake on his windsurfer, broke his own hand, foot, and leg at different times? I've got wood carving scars. My own dog bit me hard enough to dangle from my hand. I've scraped my own toenail off, showing off on my stingray. I actually have more sinuses and less brains than everyone. I've cut my boots and overalls with a chainsaw. I've been known to run into a wall in the dark and cut my head open. I've crashed into other people 6 times and I was forced off the road once into a tree, and I've been crashed into 4 or 5 times. I've had my taillight kicked in. I've jammed my middle finger trying to rescue a tire. I ruined a tire trying to rescue a family that didn't need rescuing and rebuilt an engine that still wouldn't run. I've had my car catch on fire. I'd fallen backward down the stairs, and I've fallen on my head several times trying to learn to do backflips on an inner tube. My wife has had bone cancer, but she's now a 15-year survivor. I'm actually even stupid enough to kick somebody else's car and dent it. I remember falling off my 10-speed, scraping along the road, and then falling in a ditch. And I've even been dragged behind a horse and kicked in the head several times before he let me get loose. That's when I wanted to start doing my own radio program, so you get kicked in the head enough times. You'll want to do crazy things too. But if all those things can happen to me and I can still feel good about this world we have, I hope maybe someday today or sometime during this hour you'll be searching for a way to be more positive. I am an incurable optimist. We're here today to celebrate the wonderful people and opportunities we enjoy in today's world. Today we're talking about accidents. I'm so serious about being positive, I write a plus underneath my name. My blood type is even B positive. I've taken the time to write a list of 1,001 things I'm thankful for, and I call it my list of 1,001 thanks. And every week we examine one of the 1,001 ideas to help promote a more positive experience for you and those around you. Today we're celebrating again number 7, accident, from my list of 1,001 thanks. Accidents are at least interesting for topics of conversation. If you'd like to participate today, call in at area code 801 for all of the following numbers: 254-5855, 470-5855, or 670-5855. Tell us about the greatest blessing in your life and embrace the positive today, or maybe you'd like to discuss some accident you have survived. Maybe this is a time to express your thanks for surviving those kind of things. These installments are called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Dane Allred. They are available at daneallred.podbean.com as a podcast and as a blog at 1001thanks.blogspot.com. I have an abundance of funny and interesting things that happened to me. I hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful weekend. You're listening to Abundance, and this is Dane Allred on KTKK AM 630. It's 20 minutes past the hour. You've never seen a Christmas carol like this before. Charles Dickens used to perform his most famous short story by himself. That's right, he performed all of the characters in A Christmas Carol. And I'll be performing the same cutting Charles Dickens did on December 18th and 19th at the Provo Tabernacle on University Avenue. If you go to Center Street in Provo, you'll see a free presentation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol at 7 p.m. This free performance will last a little over an hour. Begins at 7, both the 18th and 19th of December. I'd like you to join me as I play all the characters from A Christmas Carol, including Tiny Tim, or as he would say, God bless us, everyone. Your imagination is the only limit on this interpretation of this Christmas classic. That's December 18th and 19th at the Provo Tabernacle to see Dane Allred's one-man show recreated from Charles Dickens' own cutting of A Christmas Carol. You're listening to Abundance. Call in today at 801-254-5855, 470-5855, or 670-5855, and tell us about the greatest blessings in your life. Today we're discussing accident, but before we go much further with miseries I've endured, let's talk about the most famous Christmas carol ever written. If you type in Christmas Carol into a web browser, you'll see a bunch of different Christmas carols written by famous authors, famous poets that you've heard of before, but probably didn't know that they also wrote A Christmas Carol. Classic A Night Before Christmas was supposed to be published anonymously. And as you may also know this poem as A Visit from St. Nicholas. And so as we approach this Christmas season, I'd like to offer my interpretation of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Clement Clark Moore wrote this poem in 1822, and it's now the tradition in many American families to read this poem every Christmas Eve. It really redefined our image of Christmas and Santa Claus. If you think about prior to the creation of this story, St. Nicholas, the patron saint of children, had never even been associated with the sleigh or reindeers. The author was reticent, didn't really want people to know that he'd published the poem, but a family friend sent this poem to the New York Sentinel with the condition that the author was to remain anonymous. Now, the first publication date was the 23rd of December, 1823. It's an immediate success. And not until 1844 did Clement Clark Moore claim ownership when the work was included in a book of his poetry. He came from a prominent family. His father was Benjamin Moore, who was the Bishop of New York. He is famous for officiating at the inauguration of George Washington. "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" by Clement C. Moore. "'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, and Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled our brains for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from the bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle mount to the sky, so up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with the sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face, and a little round belly that shook when he laughed, like a bowlful of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang away to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and they all flew away like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." What a Christmas classic. This is the kind of abundance in the world that I want to celebrate. And I hope you're enjoying today's examination of accident number 7 from my list of 1001 thanks. Interestingly, my favorite part of this last poem that we read is we've kind of converted Happy Christmas into Merry Christmas, but that's the way it was in the original. And I think I actually said hurricane in the middle instead of hurricane. But that's what happens when you're from Utah. You know, accidents come in all shapes and sizes. Some are as small as burning rice. Others involve cars and driving too fast. This is a three-car pileup on the freeway at reduced speed. A funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Three-car pileup. I drive the speed limit. I didn't always. I used to drive a Mazda RX-7. My mom sold it to me after she had driven a few years. I talked my wife into buying it. She was dubious until we pulled up and she remembered what the car looked like. As we pulled into my mom's driveway, my wife turned to me and said, "Can I have it?" Now, she drove this car until she had cancer. Again, she's fine now, but after chemotherapy, she decided the car kind of smelled like chemotherapy, so we bought her a new car. I loved driving that sports car. It could take corners at just about any speed, which isn't good for your driving point total. I don't know how many tickets I got, but eventually I had enough points to endanger my driver's license. I could get the points reduced in half by going to traffic school, and so I did. Eventually, this car wouldn't pass inspection, so I sold it. I got older, and I started going the speed limit, and it's just not as much fun unless you're in a sports car, so I rarely get tickets anymore. The contradiction to this statement happened when I decided to leave the slow lane on the freeway. There is a place on the freeway where every day there seemed to be a slowdown at a particular part of the road. Now, all of the cars were going around a slight corner, and for some reason, no one was able to keep going the speed limit, so everyone on the freeway had to slow to a crawl. I decided to leave the safe, slow right lane, where I am nearly always found these days. I went to the middle lane, and it was slowing down too. So I moved to the fast lane, and I was still going way too fast because the cars in the fast lane were stopped. The car in front of me was stopped. I didn't think I was going to be able to stop, and I was right. I skidded a bit. I hit the car in front of me going about 5 miles per hour. It's really more of a soft tap, so I doubted there was even going to be a dent. But then I looked in the mirror. The guy behind me in the big truck was not slowing down. He was going about 35 to 40 miles an hour, and he rammed my car hard enough to bounce me into the car in front of me again. And this time I hit that guy in front of me hard enough to knock his hat off. So now I had been involved in a three-car pileup. We were the only three who had an accident. Everyone else was cautious enough not to hit somebody else. So we checked out our damage. We pulled off to the side of the road. The police officer had us pulled to the next exit to clear the freeway. I was supposed to be teaching in about an hour, and here's the problem. I got a ticket for hitting the guy in front of me. The guy behind me got a ticket for hitting me. So writing the tickets took longer than I thought it might, and I had to call one of my students in my class and tell them to go home. Now, the guy in front of me, he had an old junker, just like I did. He checked his car for damage and decided there really wasn't a reason to file a claim. He told me he was just glad he wasn't carrying big pieces of metal in the back of his car like he usually did. Yeah, I was very glad, too. My car also didn't seem to be damaged at all. And I attribute that to the spare tire, which hangs on the back of my Jeep type car, a Geo Tracker. The guy behind me had hit right into the tire. I later saw that the tire and the door moved forward a little bit, and the door wouldn't open anymore, but I usually don't use that door anyway. So the two of us in the front had little or no damage. Who I really felt sorry for was the guy behind me who hit into me going 35. He was driving a fairly new pickup, a year or two old maybe, and the tire on the back of my car had demolished his front end. The hood was bent up, his fender was crushed and dented, and the headlights had actually fallen off onto the ground. There must have been thousands of dollars in damage, and he really had no one to blame but himself. So, of the three cars involved, he was driving the nicest and probably had the biggest insurance jump the next month. Of the three cars, he had the most damage. So is there a moral to this story? Well, it may be drive a junker. Stay in the slow lane. Sometimes a three-car pileup can happen at a slower speed. I wish you safe driving this weekend. If you get the temptation to change lanes and keep going fast, just think about this cautionary tale you've heard today. I'm glad I didn't suffer more. I really should have more sympathy for the suffering of others. I'm sorry you have to hear about this side of my personality, which is not the most attractive thing I've ever done, but I probably will do it again. But I shouldn't. Funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Spare change. I have a different sense of humor. Sometimes it takes a while for people to understand just what I'm saying and realize I'm joking. Teaching high school means some students come to school not feeling their best. Either mom or dad or both work, so they can't stay home. Sometimes their folks make them go to school even when they're sick, so I get to deal with some unhappy kids at times, and it's not really hard to see who's suffering. They're not their usual selves. When I go up and ask them how they're feeling, they usually try to put a smile on and say they are okay. If they're really feeling sick, they sometimes admit it and say something like, "I don't feel good." So to try to lighten up the moment, I'll usually put my hand on their shoulder and tell them, "You feel all right to me." And so it does take them a minute to think about and remember they're feeling ill or feeling sick. So when they finally get it, I usually get a smile from them. They look at me and sometimes shake their heads. Just remember, dad humor is not really funny. It's mostly stupid, but it is stupid enough sometimes to make you laugh. I think sometimes I take it a little far. I really should use this kind of humor only with people I know. But most of you know by now, if you've been paying attention, that I really don't pay attention all that well. And the first time I tried my smart aleck dad humor on a total stranger was in Washington, D.C. As my wife and I were walking on the street, I really don't like it when people on the street beg from me. I know there are programs and places available to everyone who's willing to try and get help. So with my bad sense of humor and my general lack of common sense, the following scenario, it was probably unavoidable. Now, we were walking along and there were several people begging on the street. After saying no a few times, one guy we passed leaned out, pointed his cup at me, and he said, "Spare change?" Now, my mind works pretty fast. And my wife often has to point out, most people have a hard time keeping up sometimes. So when I looked at him and said, "No thanks, I have some," he looked at me with a kind of dumbfounded stare for a minute and processed what I just said. "Spare change? No thanks, I have some." We kept walking. From behind me, I heard someone. It was him. He laughed a little bit and said, "No, no, I want your change." But we were already too far away, and I sort of just chuckled. My wife, of course, is furious. She told me to knock it off. She's worried I might have made him angry and didn't want a confrontation. And she's usually right. I'm not smart enough to keep my mouth shut sometimes. But when someone offers a great opening like that, my brain goes on automatic and my mouth starts talking without thinking first. My daughter was in the car with us recently, and we saw a guy begging at Walmart. She's worked in homeless shelters, and she knows the programs available to the needy. So she started rattling off the different things someone who really needed help could do and started talking about how angry it made her when people begged. I wonder where she got that from. I asked her if she wanted me to roll down the window and let him know about all these wonderful opportunities. And before she could answer, I said I didn't think that was the kind of help he was looking for. One of my former students was an aide to Senator Orrin Hatch, and she has a great story about people begging from her when she was back in the Capitol. She and her husband are successful lawyers now. They actually named a son after me. Back in D.C., she used to give some of her lunch money to the same beggar every day. Then one day, she was at a hot dog stand, and there was the same guy paying for his lunch with a wad of bills, as she described as almost too big to hold in his hand. She was indignant, to say the least, and Regina is not one to hold her tongue. She was an award-winning debate and public speaker, so she spoke right up and demanded her money back. He turned to her and probably recognized her and simply said, I fooled you, didn't I? This story only confirmed what I had always thought. There must be some good money in begging if you don't care about the hit your self-esteem takes. Last spring, I did it again, and I even had two more witnesses. Try it. Just remember, spare change? No thanks. Got some. You're listening to KDKK, AM 630. I'm so grateful for all of the things I'm offered. I'd like to offer you a free opportunity to see A Christmas Carol. You know, before everyone made A Christmas Carol into a stage play, it was only available as a short story. But it was so popular, Charles Dickens actually started raising money by giving benefit performances of his shortened version of A Christmas Carol for people in the public who wanted to pay and come see it. I actually have a poster from April 15th, I believe it's 1869, where he's trying to help raise money for a hospital. And apparently, it's popular enough that people would come and listen to Charles Dickens on April 15th. So if you'd like to hear Charles Dickens' version of A Christmas Carol, I'll be performing that same cutting that he did on December 18th and 19th at the Provo Tabernacle on University Avenue and Center Street in Provo. It'll start at 7 o'clock. It's available both nights. It's free for anyone who'd like to come and see me play all 20 characters. I hope you'll join us. That's December 18th and 19th, A Christmas Carol, performed by one person at 7 o'clock p.m. You're listening to Abundance. This week I'm focusing on accident number 7 from my list of 1,001 thanks. I'm here to talk about some of my adventures and surprises I've encountered. I call these installments A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to Dane Allred, and they're available at daneallred.podbean.com as a podcast and at 1001thanks.blogspot.com. If you'd like to hear my reading of The Night Before Christmas again, that'll be available this week on Podbean, if you want to just look that up with my name. Sometimes accidental alignments of the universe work in our favor. Sometimes. A funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Write your own recommendation. Graduating from college is exciting, but the worst thing is now you have to find a job. You can't sign up for another fencing class because it's time to get up and out in the real world. I'm a drama teacher, so that kind of specialization does limit your potential employers. Drama teachers tend to keep their jobs a long time, and when I graduated, there were no jobs available in the state. So I called about 300 places in California to see if there were any jobs. I found 3 or 4 potential interviews. But I really needed something to make me stand out so the people interviewing me would have something to remember. And then I recalled that my stepfather had an uncle who was the acting president of Westminster College. They were looking for a replacement, and he really had no experience running a college, but he had great business connections. He was retired from other leadership positions. He was really doing a great job for them. And if I could only get a recommendation letter from the acting president of another educational institution, that would really be a feather in my cap. I'd already interviewed this man for a radio class I'd taken earlier in college, so I really didn't think this was going to be a problem. I brashly walked into the administration building without an appointment, asked to see the acting president. The secretary paged him, and when he found out it was me, let me right in. This was way easier than even I ever thought it would be. So I went right into my pitch. I was graduating. I was looking for a recommendation. I paused. This guy was a master. I mean, he had negotiated multi-million-dollar contracts. He had led important organizations. He even had his life threatened a time or two. He didn't get where he was by writing recommendations from people who are about to graduate from college. I was sure that he would say he didn't have the time. Well, he turned and looked at me and simply said, sure. And then he smiled a bit and he continued, you write it and I'll sign it. He gave me a few sheets of letterhead with Westminster College and the official sounding title of acting president on it. I was dumbfounded. I was to write my own recommendation. He had just sat silently and stared at me, and I mumbled a thank you and told him I'd be back in a couple of days before I left. I don't know if you've ever been asked to write a recommendation for yourself, but it's more difficult than it sounds. I've already mentioned that this is a guy who has been around the block a few times, and if I try to pad my resume, he's going to know it. I also have the delightful opportunity to try and describe what I feel are my strengths without sounding too egotistical, and I'm also responsible for making sure it sounds like he wrote it when, in fact, I really wrote it myself. I have to be good enough at this that no one who reads it will think I wrote it myself and had him sign it. I struggled and struggled to find the right wording for sentences, descriptions. I tried not to slather on the praise too much. I worked harder on this single page of about three paragraphs than I had ever worked on any writing assignment in college. I worked even harder on this paper than the one I wrote for the few English classes I took. The sad part about that 20-page paper is it was the entire basis for the grade in that class. I went to every class, read the books, commented in class. I thought I was the best student in the class. Little did I know that I was writing the paper in a completely wrong manner, and I got an F in the class. It was a great surprise to me when I read the comments of the teacher on my 20-page labor of love. He wrote, "I have no idea what you're trying to say in this paper." There's a large F on the front page, too. But I don't remember if it's a big red F. I just remember it was an F. It's okay. I didn't really need the credit. I was actually repeating it since I had signed up for the same class earlier with my wife. She had prudently dropped the class while I had lagged behind until the drop deadline had passed, and I received an F that first time too. So the second F wasn't such a big deal. But on my transcript, there is an F crossed out and replaced with another F. I didn't put that in the recommendation letter. The acting president signed it and never even read it. I hope your hard work is acknowledged more than mine was in that last example. I really don't want accidents to happen to anyone. Hey, but when they do, I am more than happy to help, especially if I can show off my prowess at the same time. We'll call this next installment Tractor Towing. Funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Tractor towing. Now, those who know me well know that I love my tractor. It's not a tractor. Tractor. It's a Jeep, kind of an all-terrain vehicle made by Geo, but it was really made by Suzuki. Think of the Suzuki Samurai, just made for Chevy. Chevy even puts its own brand on the tractor now, but I got mine back in the battle days when everyone was worried they would flip over. I've never really had that problem, but then again, I'm not trying to flip my car onto its roof. It was a steal when I bought it 15 years ago because I've squeezed every penny out of what I was charged for this car. I like it so well, I put another engine in last year and now have about 15,000 miles on the second engine. The odometer reads 220,000 miles, and I hope to see 400,000, but you never know. I've had many repairs done on this car, mostly from wearing out water pumps and other parts never designed to last more than 100,000 miles. It was brand new when we bought it, but now it's 15 years old. There's a rust spot on the back where a daughter backed into something and broke out a rear taillight. I replaced it myself, which is another thing I really like about cars. I like fixing things myself if I can, but I am repairing less and less as the years go by. I had a loose belt last week, and I know it's an easy adjustment to tighten one nut, but I've banged my knuckles on nuts and bolts enough to know that it was well worth the $21 I paid to have someone else tighten it. I was once young and stupid enough to think I was a great mechanic. Our Volkswagen broke down in Las Vegas, and the quote for overhauling the engine there was ridiculous. I could have towed the car back home and overhauled it myself for half the price, which is exactly what we did. We rented a U-Haul and a tow bar. We pulled that car back to the house in California. Now, here's a good hint for those prepared to do the same. If your steering wheel locks unless the key is in, remember to put the key in so the steering wheel can turn. Now, I forgot, and since I made a U-turn just before we left Las Vegas, the steering wheel turned a couple of times, and then it locked. Now that the front tires were turned, I dragged the car for the next 500 miles. And, you know, if you drive long enough with the wheels turned sideways, the tires heat up, the rubber begins to peel away, and when you arrive, you may notice that the tires are very hot, and the rubber actually rubs off like an eraser. I must have worn off 20,000 miles of tread. I bought a manual called Volkswagen Repair for the Complete Idiot. It was a great book. I followed the directions on how to overhaul an engine, which included the instructions to lower the engine to the ground after removing the four bolts that hold it. You place the engine on a piece of plywood and jack up the car and then drag the engine out. It only weighs a couple of hundred pounds and the plywood makes it easy to move around. And I did my best, but after I was finished, the car still wouldn't start. I took it to the dealer, and they spent another 10 hours diagnosing some electrical problems and then finally repairing it. I'm proud to say the car did run again. We put at least another 20,000 miles on the rebuilt engine, and I believe we actually had it rebuilt again after that. Now, I use my geo-tracker to haul my windsurfer to the beach, and sometimes I do get some surprising things and some surprising statements made about this little vehicle my daughter calls my Barbie car. It really does look like the car Ken might pick out for Barbie, but it really does have some surprising get up and go. And now, when I drove up and saw the Ford truck stuck in the sand, I knew that I could help. But you could tell the other drivers were dubious. I just pulled out the hook with the flat rope. I hooked it around the truck. Moments later, they were unstuck, and I had proved smaller is not necessarily inferior. It happened again a couple of months later. The big truck was stuck. Up I drove with the little Barbie car, offered to pull them out. They looked at my all-terrain vehicle, and I could see the doubt in their eyes. But they were stuck, and they really didn't have any choice but to let me try. I assured them that I had pulled another truck out of the sand, but they still looked doubtful. Seconds later, with the torque of that small wheelbase, they were unstuck. Insert your own joke about size here. Sorry, there are some things we just shouldn't put on the radio. I know whatever you came up with was way funnier than what I would have said. We're discussing accidents today on Abundance. I hope you're enjoying a positive view of the situations most of us seem to get ourselves into with way too much regularity. You know, I really feel sorry for my friend Mark. He's the target of most of the next installment. I never really meant to be cruel, but you've got to admit, there is something funny about someone squirting milk from their nose. funny thing happened on the way to Dane Allred. Running for roles. I went to an ancient high school so old that it actually had four stories. When I was going to the old Jordan High School, the school district was building what was supposed to be the new high school, but then some tremendous growth happened and both of those schools remained open. Jordan High School was eventually torn down and a new one built, but it just isn't the same. I've been to the new school. At this moment, they're wearing a hoodie I bought there, but I still miss the old school. I guess it's the same with any old building. One of my favorite memories was when lunch was served. The bell would ring and a mad dash would begin to the lunchroom, which was formerly the basketball court in the basement. With four stories, that meant you had to hustle if you wanted to get some of the delicious fresh rolls they served every day. I remember dashing down four sets of stairs as fast as my little legs could carry me. It probably wasn't very safe, and in today's risk management society, I'm surprised more people didn't break their legs back then. Maybe we were just more coordinated. You know, as I sit wearing Jordan High School memorabilia proudly, I wonder what it was like and what it was that made those rolls so good that we would risk life and limb. One of my friends didn't like the rolls, and so each day he would throw his roll into the air for the rest of us to grab. This meant four or five people were fighting over the roll, and we'd each get smashed scrap. We didn't care. We're getting bonus bread for free. Once a school reaches a certain age, the additions begin. There were so many passages to the same place, it really was easier sometimes just to take someone where they wanted to be, that telling them the directions would take twice as long. Now, this is a building that lasted 100 years, and besides having four floors and a basement, there were wings to the outside, wings to the side, there was a courtyard that was converted into some classrooms and a counseling center. We also had an ancient stage, which I remember as being especially small. The best part of this school was the tradition my family had of attending there. Now, just before it was torn down, I was in a movie at the old school. I got to sit in the front office for several hours, and I wasn't even in trouble this time. I used the time to thumb through several of the old yearbooks that were there. I found myself, I found my dad, several of his siblings, laid those out on the desk and took a picture of them. Now that I teach high school, it's hard for me to imagine I was as young as my students when I went to school. The guy who used to throw his rolls in the air was prematurely bald, so he looked like he was 40 when he was a teenager, and I saw him 30 years later, and he still looked the same. This is the same friend I tortured every year by making him squirt milk out his nose. All I had to do was wait until he was drinking his milk and deliver a well-timed, funny remark, and out would come the milk. He had enough manners not to spit it out all over us. He would simply just laugh it out of his nose, and I thought it was hilarious. He was cautious around me, trying to make sure he wasn't drinking his milk only at safe moments, but at least once every year I was able to get him. And then he started drinking pop. You may call it soda. I don't know if you've ever snorted carbonation through your nose, but it's not a pleasant experience. Milk is bad enough and water hurts, but any carbonated drink passed through your nasal passages is excruciatingly painful. It hurts for quite a while. For some reason, we feel ageless when we're in high school. I was talking to my father-in-law about this a while ago, and though in his 80s, he told me he still feels the same way he did when he was in high school. It's such a defining time in the development of our personalities, it becomes a definition of ourselves. I guess it could be a good or a bad thing. One of my students from a few years ago dropped by this week. When I asked him what he'd been doing, he said he just got out of jail. He was a student who didn't really like school, and he probably felt he was being punished with an education. I wonder if my friend remembers the good old bad old times and then is grateful not to be drinking anything at the moment.
Radio, I'm Paul Chambers. Washington state authorities have named a person of interest in the shooting deaths of four police officers this weekend. Pierce County Sheriff spokesman Ed Troyer explains why they're looking for 37-year-old Maurice Clemens.
Some past run-ins with law enforcement and some evidence that we believe he was here and we want to know why he was here. We are not calling a suspect at this time. That may change over the next couple hours, but right now he's a person of interest, and we want to know where he's at. We want to talk to him.
The officers were preparing for their shifts at a coffee house in nearby Parkland, Washington, when a man opened fire on them today, killing two officers immediately. The others died during a shootout. The suspect may be wounded. President Obama is set to address the nation this week on his new Afghanistan strategy. Former Army Brigadier General Mark Kemmett says everyone expects a call for more U.S. troops.
Most everybody in Washington expects that number to be somewhere between 30 and 40,000 when you add in the NATO component of that as well.